we are going to sort of take a look, further look at mudita. And in order to start that, we're going to watch something. And we'll see how my Zoom skills, this will be a real crucible. I can share a screen and make that work. So I hope you'll bear with me. So this is a trailer to this wonderful documentary, if you've heard of it, called Mission Joy. And it's about this kind of really lively and soulful and fun friendship of two of our living memory's most iconic spiritual leaders. So His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama, and the late Archbishop Desmond Tutu. So let me find this trailer and we'll watch it. The beginning.
We are going to be free. Sex, sex.
Did you say that?
You are a monk, remember? I sometimes say to him, the cameras are on us.
Honestly, the energy between them is 8-year-old boy.
You are mischievous.
What is the purpose of your visit, sir?
Just enjoy our friendship and talk about joy.
I don't think you could find two people on the planet who are more different than the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. One grew up in absolute poverty, the other grew up in a 1,000-room palace.
Unfortunately, that person is Christian.
Unfortunately, he's a Buddhist.
There's a lot of shared background. Both of them have deep history of struggle against authoritarian systems.
The Tibetan people are being exterminated. Their culture and religion are being stamped out.
Age 24, I lost my own country.
Amid tear gas and police dogs, Desmond Tutu led a people against apartheid.
When people decide to be free, absolutely nothing is going to stop them from becoming free.
You can overcome the most horrendous circumstances and emerge on the other side, not broken. When you say you are pursuing happiness, you are not going to find it.
Happiness isn't just something that feels good. Happier people, they're physically healthier, they have stronger immune systems, they even live longer.
Ultimate source of happy life, inside, not outside.
We really become something quite special.
Yes.
I think at the time of my death, I will remember you.
Thank you.
So it is so wonderful to see the delight that these two, you know, venerable 8-year-old boys are taking, kind of this unquenchable claim to joy that they have, you know, that has been retained pretty miraculously given the tragic ordeals that each of them have suffered personally, as well as in the lives of their hundreds of thousands of followers. So as global spiritual icons, you know, the highest order, there's kind of this vibe of kind of a natural companionship of equals, right? There's nothing to prove, and they can just kind of relax and be mischievous and, you know, that loneliness of always being the leader that we can imagine both of them experiencing is kind of just eased in one another's company. And so this abundant capacity for sharing joy with one another and the way that they express it through playfulness and affection and tenderness in their friendship just beautifully embodies the heart quality of mudita, the third Brahma Vihara. So in Pali, that word means most generally happiness or gladness. And for the purposes of the Buddhist teachings, it's been translated as sympathetic or shared or appreciative joy, meaning being able to find happiness in the successes and the well-being of others, and finding that this capacity emanates from the ability to experience joy in one's own life. So this divine abode, another term for the Brahma Viharas, is it's rooted in an awareness of our fundamental interdependency and kind of the interbeing that Thich Nhat Hanh describes as understanding that nothing exists separately from anything else and that we are all interconnected, or what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. poetically called our inescapable network of mutuality tied in a single garment of destiny. And Archbishop Tutu used the Zulu word Ubuntu, which means I am because you are. And so in this way, invokes this universal bond of sharing that connects all of us. And so this ability to kind of really get the interconnected nature of our time here supports being able to experience joy in spite of inevitable adversities. So not just in this documentary, but those who have met the Dalai Lama in various settings sort of consistently marvel at his joyful presence and his humor. And he has been asked how he's maintained this after being exiled from his homeland of Tibet and witnessing the destruction of its culture and traditions. And he replied that after what has been taken, I won't let them take my happiness too. I was hearing in a Dharma talk from Jack Kornfield about a Japanese art that is called kintsugi, and it involves repairing broken pottery with a lacquer that is mixed with powdered gold, and so the cracks in the vessel become golden, and they transform this shattered bowl or cup into something that's beautiful and distinctive. Precisely because of its brokenness. So Jack Kornfield is, you know, my teacher. I refer to his wisdom a lot. Recalls that his teacher, Ajahn Chah, from the Thai Forest Monastery, would ask regularly, where have you learned more? Where has your heart grown wiser when having good times or going through difficulties? And, you know, we can just right away resonate with the truth that looking back, it is often just the most unwelcome challenges that we've had that increase our wisdom and heighten our appreciation for gladness and joy when it does arise. And kind of an example of this comes up if we kind of remember how not too long ago, after the most extreme of the COVID lockdowns led us to defer gathering with loved ones in person, and how just vividly wonderful it was to when we were able to reunite with them in person and to see their faces and their smiles and to embrace them. These were just beautiful, joyful moments for so many of us that came out of the adversity of having been separated and everything that drove that. So in the Buddhist teachings, jealousy and resentment are known as the far enemies of shared joy. And in the way that they reflect a belief in a limited supply of good fortune. So blessings for you means less good stuff for me. And then we kind of circle back to the title, The Four Immeasurables, right? Immeasurable. So shared joy invites us to understand that there's an endless amount of happiness ever expanding available to all of us if we choose it. There's also kind of touching into the socio-political level of this, right? So intentionally cultivating shared joy also kind of resists this pretty toxic myth of capitalism that promotes perpetual consumption as the key to happiness and even makes happiness itself into a commodity. And predictably, you know, this generates a sort of painfully dissatisfied mindset and competition among those sort of conditioned to it and buying into it for just ever greater social and material success. You know, whether it's more Instagram followers or a certain kind of car or whatever the prize might be, you know, it's won at the expense of having a restless feeling of always seeking, never finding, never just arriving. And a byproduct of this whole sort of head trip can be an internal experience of loneliness and separation. Right. We're reading a lot and sort of cultural criticism and the media around sort of this epidemic of loneliness and isolation as sort of our community systems weaken and the medicine that reconnecting can be. So as we turn towards the natural freedom and the sheer abundance of available joy, this can untether us from that isolation. And the experience of joy is kind of rare and elusive and something, you know, that cannot be easily obtained. And sort of circling back to Archbishop Tutu and the Dalai Lama, Archbishop said, when you say you're pursuing happiness, you're not going to find it. You know, and the Dalai Lama chimed in and said, happiness is happy life inside, not outside. So it's through sustained and intentional mindfulness practice that is one way to begin to cultivate the conditions that are most conducive to the arising of joy. And in her book, Happiness is an Inside Job, the beloved West Coast Buddhist teacher Sylvia Boorstein describes it as chosen each moment in the here and now. So as we practice deliberately and over time, you know, we experience that kind of states become traits and we begin to find ourselves able to reside more and more in states of gratitude and wonder and interconnectedness. And also by cultivating the wisdom and the loving presence that support the arising of joy, we're also increasing our ability to kind of flow with the expansions and the contractions and the changes of our moment-to-moment experience and to hold that interplay, you know, of the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows and the shadow and the light in our lives. So mudita, as with the other Brahma Viharas, needs tending to grow and there are processes that support that. And just kind of offering a few for your consideration. Although this could be like, you know, peeling an onion, there are so many, but, you know, meditation on the Brahma Viharas, all of them of loving kindness and compassion and shared joy and equanimity, right? And there are many different formats and ways and lineages of doing this. And we're kind of just tasting, you know, I kind of a tasting menu here and there during the course of this class. And another way to cultivate conditions that can give rise to experiences of joy is that process we spoke of with metta, for instance, just weaving it through your daily life, right? Not just kind of on the cushion, as we say, but throughout your day, right? So choosing consciously to be present in the here and now when walking or eating or conversing or waiting in a line is really a wonderful way to just step in at any moment, a low-tech way to the really kind of the freedom and the poignancy of being able to kind of be here now. You know, another way is to notice times when wholesome states such as appreciation, contentment, delight kind of arise in your body, mind, and heart, right? Noticing them. Sometimes we kind of fail to recognize them and then they're gone, you know? And if we notice them, we can welcome them fully, not by clinging or trying to make them stay, but just kind of allowing ourselves to connect with them in the moment appreciatively. You know, and kind of in a complementary way, sort of working with our resistance and struggle, you know, when unpleasant states arise around physical pain or difficult emotions, fear, anger, and so forth, knowing that they too will pass and they are part of the balance that supports your experiences of gladness. So gratitude practice. Certainly gratitude meditation, and you probably know folks or do yourself keep a gratitude journal. You can keep a gratitude jar. You can go on a gratitude walk, sort of noticing things that lead you to appreciate them. Or have a gratitude buddy, right? Like let's text one another daily, like one experience that we had today that we were grateful for. So, you know, this concept of growing and cultivating our gratitude. And as Jack says, it as gratitude grows, it gives rise to joy. And we experience the courage to rejoice in our own good fortune and the good fortune of others. Another process that you could consider is to kind of keep a nourishment list or a joy list. And maybe without overthinking it too much, just sort of take a few moments and then periodically revisit to create a list of experiences that are particular to you, you know, that can be simple, you know, eating a good peach, or intense, you know, whitewater rafting, some kind of adventure of that level, just experiences that bring you a sense of delight and aliveness. And, you know, seeing how many of these are currently present in your life on a regular basis and considering which might be integrated more, just as you're kind of realistically, but kind of determinedly able to do so. So we also know and value our time spent in nature, right? That forest bathing, as the Japanese call it. And also, you know, with creativity, creative arts and endeavors that really kind of speak to our particular sort of soul qualities, and also sort of deliberately fostering the connectedness that is available and growing the connectedness that is available in your life through different opportunities for service and community, for Sangha, as it's known in Buddhism.